Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The 26th day of June, 2014, Thorn in the Side, Thursday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you'll find access to the chat room, and you are welcome to wander on in. And we had a great crowd in there last night. Wow. Huge. And folks are coming in even as we speak. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Jan. Good evening to our three inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderators, Lottie, Sparky, and Texas Betsy. Hey, Will, how are you? And come on by. Because whenever the spirit moves. Yeah, it is effing hot in here, Devin. Broadcasting live from the Head On Radio Network Head On Radio Network sauna. Yeah. Great big high puffy clouds that might mean rain or might not, and you just don't know. And well, it's summer, isn't it? That's the way it goes around here. Yeah, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and you can participate any way you choose. I mean, it is up to you. If you want to call in the program, well, you can do that. You can email bobkincaid@gmail.com. You can tweet @BobKincaid. You can hop in on via Facebook at either the Horn Facebook page or the Facebook page. Lots of good stuff on my page these days. A lot of people participating. It makes it really interesting. Bob Kincaid, by the way, on Facebook. You can chat via Skype, as Asa just did. A lot of people. I get a lot of messages via Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. There. If you're on some sort of mobile eye or smart device, well, we recommend the apps from TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher, with the simple caveat that any advertisements which you might see thereon are in no wise part of the of how the Horn gets funded. We don't get paid for our content that gets run on those aggregators. Just so you'll know. And really, it's more important to make sure that you don't think that if you should happen to see some sleazy ExxonMobil ad on one of those, that you don't think that, oh, look, by God, the Horn's taking oil money. So much for their credibility. No, we don't get paid. No, the only way that we keep this all on the air, and you know this, is via contributions from listeners who make it possible for us to offer the programming free to anyone who cares to listen. The podcasts are free. The live stream is free. The 24/7 stream is free. And it is through voluntary contributions that it remains that way. Because we ain't selling nothing here. Just remember that. Nothing. Let's see. Asa got us started right before airtime. Thank you, Asa. What had been a $270 fundraising goal, because fundraising was pretty slim last night, $270 fundraising goal is now a $255 fundraising goal. So it'd be nice if folks, well, joined in with Asa and helped us keep this all going, because letting the holes get deep is, well, it sucketh. It sucketh big. So there we are, 25 folks at $10 a piece, 10 at 25, 5 at 50, 2 at 125, you know the math. Well, yeah, Devin, it is kind of a sun porch studio. It's south-facing, and there's a lot of glass. and it gets right warm. And the air conditioner, this time of year, and remember, there's a bunch of computers and monitors and electrical equipment in here, and it puts out a little of its own heat. So, it gets a little toasty in here. That's why during the summer, I often do naked radio in here. Yeah. Because it's radio. And that way nobody has to use the eye bleach. No, it's thorn in the side Thursday, and we have no small amount of said thorns. Oh, brother. We got handed an outright bundle of them by the Supreme Court today. Yes, we did. After issuing a ruling a couple of days ago that was sort of a half a loaf, that with regard to the EPA's ability to do its job, today it got a little more interesting. And as we roll downhill, and there was an outright win, by the way, yesterday when the Supreme Court ruled that if the police want to go rooting through your cell phone, they said it rather bluntly. I think it was a 7-2 decision or something like that. We ruled today very simply, get a warrant. In a way, it was kind of like taking the Fourth Amendment and doing some chest compressions on it just to keep it barely alive. But that was a good ruling. Even a blind hog does find an acorn now and then, right? But today, it got a little nasty. I mean, this is straight up nasty. Imagine being at a time, being female, or being the partner of a woman who is pregnant and faces that difficult decision of whether or not to carry a pregnancy to term. And imagine making the decision to go and terminate the pregnancy because it's right for you, it's your right, and it is your choice. Well, as many folks can tell you, and I know especially our good friend Beth in Dallas, who has dedicated her working life to the issue of women's access to reproductive care. The Christians who picket and march around and scream at and raise a ruckus over a woman trying the best she can to make the best decision she can for her, her body, her family. Yeah. Can be subjected to some real vile Christian nastiness in attempting to access a clinic. Well, McCullen versus Coakley has been decided now by the Supreme Court of the United States. The rats. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. The opinion was authored by the Chief Justice, the R in rats, John Roberts. At issue was a law passed in 2000, enacted in 2000 in Massachusetts, that was designed to keep abortion clinic protesters 35 feet away from the public way or sidewalk leading to a reproductive health facility. This was so that the followers of Christ Jesus, who manifest the love of Jesus Christ by screaming, threatening, bullying women on their way into the facility, would not be able to impede a woman's actual right to go to the actual facility. also so that they couldn't go up to the woman and counsel her. Here then is what Rats John Roberts wrote. In short, traditional public fora are areas that have historically been open to the public for speech activities. Thus, even though the Act, buffer zone law in here, says nothing about speech on its face, there is no doubt, and respondents do not dispute, that it restricts access to traditional public fora and is therefore subject to First Amendment scrutiny. Consistent with the traditionally open character of public streets and sidewalks, we have held that the government's ability to restrict speech in such locations is very limited. So in the name of the First Amendment, the Supreme Court is willing to countenance the assault and perhaps even battery of women attempting to access a reproductive care facility. This law had to be passed in the first place in Massachusetts because there are three Planned Parenthood clinics that the followers of Christ Jesus have picketed and screamed over and tried to intimidate women to keep them from going inside. Here, then, via the story at Alternet, a little more of the reasoning. Notice earlier in the first quote that John Roberts has to make stuff up. Even though the buffer zone law says nothing about speech on its face, there's no doubt that it restricts access to tradition. Okay. So it's a First Amendment case because John Roberts says it's a First Amendment case. And John Roberts wants to make sure that we all understand that that there are nice abortion protesters, too. There are sweet, kindly, loving, genial, little old lady abortion clinic protesters. And that's who we're protecting here. Some of the individuals who stand outside Massachusetts abortion clinics are fairly described as protesters, who express their moral or religious opposition to abortion through signs and chants, or in some cases, more aggressive methods such as face-to-face confrontation. Petitioners take a different tack. They attempt to engage women approaching the clinics in what they call sidewalk counseling, which involves offering information about alternatives to abortion and help pursuing those options. See, this isn't an assault. No. This is sidewalk counseling. See, this is what happens when you get people on the Supreme Court who have never actually done much in the way of real meat and potatoes lawyering. Because let's say you are that hypothetical woman that I mentioned at the beginning of this discussion, and you are walking to the reproductive care facility, and some big, fat, pasty-faced, doughy man, you know, there's always a bunch of men in these abortion clinic protests, you know, grow a uterus, comes running up to sidewalk counsel you. Hard cases make bad law. They teach you that on the first day with your first cup of coffee in law school. Hard cases make bad law. This was apparently a hard case because this is bad law. Because by virtue of the lack of John Roberts and the other members of the Rats' lack of real-world experience, by virtue of the fact that John Roberts, Sammy Alito, Slappy Thomas, and Fat Tony Scalia will never have to make this choice, not having any uteri, they're clueless. Because they are not female and do not live in a world where rape is always a possibility, where somebody, I mean, where you can't even walk from point A to point B without some guy going, "Hey, baby, nice tits." they reach conclusions that are completely divorced from reality. In this case, the oldie English common law, which carries over into most state and commonwealth statutes, crime of assault. Now, at oldie English common law, assault is defined as putting someone reasonably in fear of receiving an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. All right? It's not very complicated. Assault is a pretty low bar, because the law of assault developed to try to keep brawls from happening. And being put in reasonable apprehension of receiving an imminent touching of an insulting or provoking nature. One, is our hypothetical woman walking into the abortion clinic with a bunch of hooting Christians all around her, would she be reasonable in being in fear? I say yes. And understand, you do not have to, for assault to obtain, you do not have to be touched. It is the apprehension that is the gravamen of the inquiry. Were you reasonably put in fear that you were about to be touched in an insulting or provoking manner? You see, here's the trick. When the touching takes place, be it with a feather or a fist, the crime of assault merges into the crime of battery. A tap on a shoulder, if it's done in an insulting or provoking manner, constitutes battery. The merest touch, the tiniest brushing, the most infinitesimal contact can be battery, if it is of an insulting or provoking nature. But the rats live in a male privileged bubble world where they never have to deal with that. So here you are, our hypothetical woman who is who knows how pregnant and has made a decision to go to Planned Parenthood. And here comes somebody at you. You've never seen this person before in your life. And you have no idea what their intentions are. But because they are driven by some sort of religious mania, they feel privileged to invade your personal space to try to make your healthcare decision for you. Now, take that hypothetical and plug it in to being reasonably in fear of receiving an imminent touching of an insulting or provoking nature. These anti-abortion creeps commit assault constantly. And, of course, in this particular case, McCullen of McCullen versus Coakley is a little old lady. You know what? We live in a country where little old ladies have guns in purses. We live in a country where you don't know what's going to happen when the stranger walks up to you. We live in an incivil society. According to John Roberts, the buffer zones were actually working because they were preventing little old ladies and big pasty-faced doughy men from walking up to these women and committing the crime of assault, for which the woman hath no remedy. Roberts claims that the number of women, because of the buffer zone, the number of women talked out of abortions had decreased. He implicitly ruled that making sidewalks open to Christian creepies is more important than the integrity or the rights of a woman, an individual, not to have the crime of assault and or battery practiced upon her. I mean, this gets really complicated if you live in the real world. Because one never knows, as noted, what's coming next. Okay, so little old lady McCullen comes up to you and lays her hand on your shoulder and says, "Daughter, may I speak to you?" And you know what? You've just been battered. And your right to self-defense has just been triggered. In many states in this union, say Florida, you know what? You know what our hypothetical woman can do when she sees little old Mrs. McCullen coming up to her? She can take out her freedom protector and blow Mrs. McCullen into a million tiny pieces. Because that's good for society, right? Let's say the partner of our hypothetical pregnant woman is walking with her and sees one of these Christian creepers coming up and just happens to have a baseball bat. That is what it is coming to. You want to be left alone by these anti-abortion Christian creepers? Carry a baseball bat. Carry, say, a one iron. Four! Yes, the poor little Christians are being persecuted. Here's what John Roberts says about it. These burdens on petitioner's speech have clearly taken their toll. Although McCullen claims that she has persuaded about 80 women not to terminate their pregnancy since the 2007 amendment, she also says that she reaches far fewer people than she did before the amendment. Plaintiff Zarella reports an even more precipitous decline in her success rate. She estimated having about 100 successful interactions over the years before the 2007 amendment, but not a single one since. And as for the Worcester Clinic, Clark testified that only one woman out of 100 will make the effort to walk across the street to speak with her. The buffer zones have also made it substantially more difficult for petitioners to distribute literature to arriving patients. What right do they have in the first place? We're talking about people who have no relationship whatsoever with a woman walking to an abortion clinic. What sick sense of privilege must attach to these creepers? These stalkers. And they are, they're stalkers. Where in the Constitution of the United States is an individual guaranteed some sort of right to approach a person that does not know them from Adam's house cat and begin to accost them over a choice they have already made? Hint, there is no such right, but by God, the rats have created one, because a Christian creeper has a greater right to proselytize than an individual American citizen has to be left alone. What kind of, okay, so we're gonna create rights in people who should have none. No, I'm not saying they shouldn't have religious rights. They should absolutely have religious rights. Go to church. Pray all day. Live on hay. Wait for pie in the sky when you die, for all I care. But individuals in this country absolutely have an individual right to be left alone by these creeps. So what do the rats say? The rats say that abortion clinics can work with police on a case-by-case basis. Oh, for the love of... How's that going to work out? That means that every time a woman makes an appointment to go to an abortion provider, the clinic is going to have to call the police, disclose the woman's name, the time of her appointment, and request a police escort to keep these goddamn stalkers from committing assault and battery against her? What happens when the beat cop happens to be one of these weirdo Christian creepers? Huh? This is infuriating. And it is not going to end well. You know that I deplore gun violence. I deplore violence generally. But even the law itself acknowledges a right to self-defense. What's going to happen to the woman who has one of these Christian creepers come up at her, not knowing the person, not knowing what their intent is, and then draws, I don't know, maybe from her gun bra, a pistol, and blows away the creeper? In the murder trial in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, will the ancient defense of the dumb bastard had it coming to him stand up with a jury? What happens if the jury is loaded up with Christian creepers? Get a rope! What happens? This is simply unbearable. Is the next step just to give in to the right wing and the gun goobers and gun up? Should abortion providers, abortion clinics, begin providing private militia, open carry types, to form a cordon around a person coming into their facility, so that these sick people will leave the patients alone? Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line. I think we've gotten Ron's dander up. Wait a goddamn minute. Hey, Bob, would this decision have made dim leaders' free speech zones illegal? These lying sons of bitches will turn themselves inside out to come to the conclusion that they want. And that's absolutely true, and no, it wouldn't have. Because this court ruled, the court also ruled on those free speech zones. Yeah, and Marty's right. The problem with this case is that the rats plus Kennedy were joined by the other four. Marty asking, how the F do the three women agree with that opinion? Well, some of this has to do with not living in the real world. as I saw observed by a commenter on a post over at Charlie Pierce's blog, he said, how do we explain the Fourth Amendment decision? Lawyers have cell phones. On the other hand, six members of the Supreme Court do not have a uterus. Yeah, it was a 9-0 decision. But make no mistake that it was ideologically driven by the rats. And the reason it was a 9-0 decision, the reason not one justice would stand up for a lone woman trying to make her way to a facility where she is going to have a procedure that about which she has possibly already agonized, the reason that not one justice would stand up for her is because they said, oh, it's a First Amendment case, when actually it's a case about whether or not Christian proselytizers have the right to commit assault and battery. Kate, under the subject line, question of legalities. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on the radio. But we can take a run at this as lay people. Kate says, I'm feeling real world this afternoon. Battery is on my mind. Is it illegal to tase someone after being assaulted? Is it legal to shoot someone with a paintball gun? How about a squirt gun loaded with vinegar? I've had to escort women through those threatening apes. Police escort would have never been an option. They don't even handle rape interviews well. Oh, to have had some personal options like paint, electric zapping, or at least vinegar makes my palms sweat at the thought of it. Self-defense is always an affirmative defense to assault and or battery, and particularly battery. These sick Christians felt persecuted because they couldn't run up and commit assault on total strangers. Maybe it's time. No, I'm not going to say it that way. Maybe now they'll find out what persecution really means. I'm not advocating that. I am nonviolent. But if a total stranger Christian creeper came at someone I cared about on the way into a women's reproductive care facility and looked like they were about to lay hands upon her, I absolutely would support her, the woman I was with, if she chose to defend herself against an imminent threat. Wonder how the NRA feels about this. Does a woman trying to walk into a reproductive care facility, does she have a right to stand her ground? When we know how many crimes are committed, and so many of them sex crimes, by members of Christian organizations, is a woman within her right to try to protect herself against imminent contact? I can't imagine it would be much of a challenge for defense counsel. Stomp the living snot out of Mrs. McCullen.
Yeah, she's a little old lady.
Just gut stomp her. The minute she tries to reach out her hand, prevent the assault. and then wait for the charges and file that self-defense motion and walk away. Make no mistake, at the core of the anti-abortion movement is a keen yearning for theocracy. Absolutely. Because, you see, you cannot make an anti-abortion argument without recourse to your religious tenets. And in that instant, you realize that these people are actually... this isn't about protecting their First Amendment rights. What about the First Amendment right of the woman walking into the clinic not to be compelled into some sort, into a religious view which she does not share? Because at base level, and all the way through, running all the way through every argument, is a desire to compel people's conduct into the narrow confines of a religious dogma, particularly a fundamentalist, evangelical, Christian religious dogma. Texas Betsy noting, Bob, we're not even allowed to defend ourselves against domestic violence. Who would allow us to defend ourselves against this assault by nice little old ladies? It's all in how you frame it, Betsy. Maybe the smart thing would be for abortion providers to make it known that any approach by any Christian creeper will be treated as an imminent threat. And then, of course, the Christian creepers are, "Woo, we're being persecuted in Jesus' name!" And I kind of hate myself for feeling this way, but look at the corner into which the Supreme Court have painted innocent victims of Christian creeping. Yeah, we were talking about the maxims of equity a week or so ago. And I mentioned that maxim that says equity will not tolerate a wrong without a remedy. And this is a real conundrum. Because there is no remedy for the victim here. And the victim is not the Christians. You know, equity is things like injunctive relief and writs and, let's say, how about a writ of prohibition or an injunction against the creepers, telling them not to approach women without their express consent. Well, look at this ruling and you can get an idea how that would play out.
Mrs. McCullen would run into court again and say, "Oh, I'm a Christian and my First Amendment religious rights are being trampled because I've been enjoined not to share the glorious good news of salvation from Christ Jesus."
And the rats would then strong arm the other four, or the other five, into saying, "Oh, yes, it is. Oh, we cannot violate the little Christians' First Amendment rights.
Bless their little hearts. They're just motivated by the love of Jesus."
This is how theocracy happens. And the question becomes one of how do you respond to it? Now, we had the clip the other day from Governor Reverend Mike Huckstermey, father of the dog torturer, who decided that he knew better than Chief Justice John Marshall did as to who should do the interpreting of the Constitution. Well, lo and behold, here we have some interpreting of the Constitution. It looks like this time it's our ox getting gored. Gored indeed. Because there seems to be no way out of this. This is the slow, steady progress of this country toward a theocratic fascist takeover of every institution of our civic life. I've been engaged in a little discussion on Facebook about, and I brought up my long-held tenet that we are, whether we recognize it or not, witnesses to the crumbling of empire, the collapse of empire. And empires do not collapse nicely. Seldom does empire go gently into that good night. Oh, Marty, I suspect you're right. You want to see NRA-sanctioned gun control? Arm reproductive clinic workers and or escorts. Suddenly we'll be having, the NRA will want a discussion about reasonableness in open carry. Betsy with an interesting question. How would the Supreme Court feel about Muslim and or Jewish fundies picketing pork barbecue joints? Yeah. Because we're talking about religious freedom, right? Now, is this decision narrowly tailored? Does it just apply to being to Christian creepers being able to assault total stranger women trying to walk into an abortion clinic? Or does this mean that maybe some Jews and Muslims could come together and find common ground and go and barbecue and picket a barbecue joint and try to counsel people going in there to eat the heathen pig? Does this mean that people like me, who find evangelical fundamentalism to be an absolute cancer on our country, does this mean that we now have the right to walk up to people walking into church on Sunday and say and saying, please, can I counsel you for a few minutes against going in and participating in that evil, evil, evil business that happens in there? Do you have a minute for me to tell you about my Lord and Savior Huitzilopochtli? These nine were really stupid today. Yeah, via Skype, Robert in Morgantown says, surely freedom of religion must include freedom from religion. One would think, but you know what? Go ask an evangelical fundamentalist. They'll tell you that's not true. That it's just a straight up lie. You have no right in this country not to be accosted by the religion industry. My local cable company. Now, I can't get Al Jazeera America from my local cable company. But by God, I can get nine different electric Jesus channels
and they're packaged with the basic package, the basic plan. So I don't have any choice. I can't call that cable company and say, get that filth off my cable. I don't want to pay for it. I can't do that with Fox either. Or the Hunt and Gun channel. I'm not free to do that. Yeah, see, the examples just begin to sort of multiply and pop up like mushrooms after a spring rain. Marty pointing out, what about maybe some vegans picketing places that sell meat? Can I counsel you against buying that hamburger? Nope, because veganism is not a religion. Because even though the Supreme Court says that this is a First Amendment speech case, what they're doing is they are hiding the religion industry behind free speech's skirts. Marty noting, yeah, call it what it is. It's a return to the Dark Ages. Ron in Raleigh says, this will not end well. Recently, a woman was sentenced to 7 years for battering a police officer that had grabbed her from behind. Most escorts have a no-contact rule, so they can't strike back. The women seeking reproductive care will have no recourse. Diane, presently writing from a little blue spot called Rochester in New York, but typically Diane of Kansasstan, says, Bob, I think some on the far right, including perhaps a couple of the Supremes, want to look down from their well-protected citadels and see the serfs fighting and drawing blood. To use your word, Bob, they yearn for the street fights that will become a spectator sport for them. Sickos. It is not just that they are in their ivory towers. Some of them may be sick voyeurs. Oh, I agree. And Texas Betsy pointing out, you know, many vegans base their food and lifestyle choices on religion as they understand it. Yeah, but see, they're not going to get away with it unless they're willing to be Christians about it. You know, maybe the threat is enough. See, this is another way that, because understand, this case gets to the Supreme Court because these Christian creepers are all kinds of lawyered up, and being as how they're all tax-exempt organizations, they've got more money than God, and they've got a small army of weirdo lawyers to prosecute their cases. So let's say maybe you want, maybe somebody wants to set up maybe an open carry group who will voluntarily escort a woman into an abortion clinic. Maybe she's just going to Planned Parenthood for a mammogram. You know, those happen there. Maybe she's going to get a pocket full of condoms. Maybe it's about a contraceptive prescription. All kinds of stuff happens at Planned Parenthood. And one of these Christian creepers walks up, never knowing. Maybe she's not even pregnant. Maybe she's just trying to keep from being pregnant. Doesn't matter. The Christian creepers have a right to proselytize because of, you know, Jesus. So let's work with my hypothetical for a moment. Let's say that we get a volunteer group together who are going to open carry, locked and loaded, baby. Maybe with a Black Rain AR-15. Maybe it can be a bunch of really bad attitude women and they can use Black Rain pink camo AR-15s with a 100-round clip. So they take to escorting women into the abortion clinic. How long will it be before the Jesus creepers are in court seeking an extraordinary writ of prohibition or an injunction against the abortion clinic telling them that they aren't allowed to provide protection to the women who are coming into their clinic because they, the Jesus creepers, have an absolute religious First Amendment right to commit assault. Let's say it's just, okay, let's say there's no organization to it. Let's say the abortion clinic has no knowledge, has no hand in it whatsoever. And let's just say a woman and her partner are walking up to Planned Parenthood. And the husband or the partner or the girlfriend or whatever, because we're gender neutral about all of this. Let's say the partner just happens to be carrying a Louisville Slugger. Maybe he or she is using it as a sort of walking stick. A shillelagh, if you will. How long before the Jesus creepers call the police and say, "We're scared of him!" Yeah, see, Texas Betsy, it's baseball season. Once upon a time, I carried a baseball bat everywhere I went, and I had two gloves and a baseball as well, because I never knew when the opportunity would present itself for the kids and me to go out in an open field in the bright, warm sunshine and toss the ball around, maybe hit a couple of fungos here and there. That way you can't be accused of carrying a deadly weapon. Because if you ain't got no baseball and no gloves, but you got the bat, well, cops get suspicious. What a mess. Yeah, Devin, the scrotus strikes back. Hey, Scro, take it easy. This kind of but this opinion kind of gives you a sense that something nasty, because we're still waiting for the real doozy. I mean, we're waiting for the other shoe to drop, because we're still waiting on the Hobby Lobby decision, which, by my guess, will probably be issued at about 4:59 p.m. tomorrow. Robert just sent me a link. Alabama abortion clinic slated to close on Friday because of pro-life, which means pro-fetus laws. It was in Huntsville, Alabama, I think, at a clinic there in the last year or so, that a woman was going in to have labor induced or to have an abortion performed because her baby was dead within her. He said it was everything, and he had to do everything in his power not to just punch the life out of somebody, because the Christian creepers started singing "Happy Birthday, Dead Baby," or something equally vile. But according to the 9 members of the Supreme Court, that's okay. Sure. So anybody want to put on the tattered robe with the frayed moons and stars on it and get out the magic eight ball with the cracked plate that always says "Answer Hazy, Ask Again Later," and try to predict how this is going to work out? Now that this has been handed down, now that the statute's been stricken in Massachusetts, will the Christian creepers be right all the way up to the damn doors tomorrow morning?
And what'll happen then?
Because if somebody so much as bats an eyelash at these poor, persecuted weirdos, they'll scream that they're being murdered.
And the trouble is, there's no reasoning with these people. None whatsoever. There is no compromise with them. Let's say we want to have 5 abortion clinics in Alabama. And the Christian creepers want there to be none. Well, there's no compromise at 2 or 3. There's no compromise at 1. They will not compromise until they have forced their sick, twisted, religious views on all of us. And that is precisely what just happened. And bless our little hearts. God love us. We'll take it. We'll take it. Oh, we might have us a rally. Or we might chant some chants and sing some songs. But we're going to take this. Because there aren't going to be any baseball bat escorts for innocent women trying to go to an abortion clinic. They're not going to exist. There aren't going to be any cadres of taser-wielding women surrounding an innocent woman trying to access one of these clinics. It's not going to happen. Maybe there will be some escorts completely unarmed and sworn to nonviolence and promising not to lay a hand on the Christian creepers. But that ain't much protection. And so, because they can effectively hide behind the skirts of the First Amendment, the Christian creepers are going to be allowed to constantly and persistently violate one of the most basic ancient tenets of the law that has been handed down to us from something approaching time immemorial. Because they are Christians, the creepers, the stalkers, the screamers, the bullies, will be allowed to freely violate laws relating to assault and physical contact crimes any time they wish. And on this day, the 26th day of June, 2014, we have the 9 members of the Supreme Court of the United States to thank for knocking down one more bastion of civil society in this country. I saw a video the other day. It's making its rounds on Facebook. It's a cell phone video that was shot. A woman was in a crowded subway car when she realized something was touching her, and she looked over, and here's this dude with his penis out and a condom on it, rubbing it against her. She didn't scream and run away. She started videoing, and everybody started videoing. And she said, "Oh, no, I'm staying right here with you, and I am going to march you right to the police precinct." The man was subsequently charged and convicted and deported. The same would not happen with a Christian. Because apparently, according to the Supreme Court, their religious rights trump even the most ancient aspects of the criminal law. Jesus. Yeah. Ron and Raleigh noting, I can't wait until this court revisits Griswold versus Connecticut. Oh yes, that's just going, that is going to be a day of great jubilation. Yeah, maybe we can give out free copies of on that day. Maybe we can give out free copies of Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale. Texas Betsy noting, you know, Bob, it's interesting that this decision came down exactly a year after Wendy Davis's filibuster. The goddess of irony never sleeps. She does not get the credit she deserves. Oh, no. So, wow, there went an hour. Here endeth the filibobster. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn, and we are trying to crawl out of a $255 hole. Your help is badly needed, as it ever is. PayPal is one way of helping fill in the hole. The traditional mail address is another way. Just remember, when you contribute, you're not buying anything. We have a pretty good sized audience, and you're making it possible for this to continue to happen for everyone. Because, you know, we're not operating on a business model. We're not operating on a profit model. We're operating on a community model. So, yeah. It only takes 25 people at $10 a piece. So we'll take a break. It is Thursday. Kind of wondering where the Green News Report is. Maybe it's just a little late getting in this evening. Don't know. Oh, what have we here, Ron and Raleigh? Yeah, possible. I don't know. I kind of had this one queued up. This is Conversation Radio. If you want to get involved in the conversation, do please feel free to jump right in. Hey, looks like we'll be going to the phones right after the break. Jump right in, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
I've got no use for women. A true one may never be found. They'll stick by a man for his money. When it's gone, they'll turn him down. They're all alike at the bottom. Selfish and grasping for all. They'll stick by a man when he's winning. And laugh in his face when he falls. My pal was a straight young cowpuncher, honest and upright and square. But he turned to a gambler and gunman, and a woman sent him there. Quicker and surer his gun play, till his heart in his body lay dead. When a Vanco insulted her picture, he filled him full of lead. All night long they trailed him through Mesquite and Chaparral. and I couldn't but think of that woman as I saw him pitch and fall. If she'd been the pal that she should have, he might have been raising a son instead of out there on the prairie to fall by a ranger's gun. Death's low sting did not rubble. His chances for life were too slim. But where they were a-putting his body was all that worried him. He lifted his head on his elbow. The blood from his wound flowed red. He looked at his pals grouped around him and whispered to them and said, "Oh, bury me out on the prairie, where the coyotes may howl o'er my grave. Bury me out on the prairie, and some of my bones please save. Wrap me up in my blanket, cover me deep neath the ground. Cover me over with boulders of granite huge and round." So they buried him out on the prairie, and the coyotes still howl o'er his grave. But his soul is now resting from the unkind cut she gave. And many a similar cowpuncher, as he rides by that pile of stone, recalls some similar woman and envies his molten bones.
That, of course, is Earl Ives. And I understand that that is on the that's on the playlist that John Roberts likes to listen to while he's crafting opinions, wherein, as he swore under oath, that he would only call balls and strikes. God, if you're a woman trying to access reproductive health care, I think John Roberts just called a strike that was about 4 feet above the batter's head and 8 feet off the plate. Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, did I get on?
You're on.
Wow. I just
And you are?
I'm sorry, very sorry. Roger in Minneapolis.
Oh, hey, Roger. How are you?
I've been lurking for a couple of weeks here.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. I was just listening to Philip Obster and by TuneIn Radio, which buffers the program, and you suggested people try to call, and you were going to go to the Green News Report, and you gave the number, and I dialed it, and bam, I'm on the on immediately. I'm just surprised as the heck out of me.
Miracles of modern science, Roger.
Yeah, well, it's also I thought I'd have a little harder time since you're only running one line right now. Is that not correct?
For some reason or another, we had one caller in, but I guess the call dropped, and so you lucked out.
Okay, well, that's good. In a way, perhaps. All depends on how boring I am. I am full of stuff to discuss, but this business of eliminating, or at least calling down, the constitutionality of the Massachusetts buffer zone around abortion clinics, really just that's just. It floors me, because where then are there any boundaries? 35 feet is not a lot of space, and do people have a constitutional right now to? Are they going to challenge the right of a state to establish a buffer zone around entrances to public buildings for people who wish not to breathe other people's cigarette smoke at such close quarters?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It depends. It depends, and I'm not being sarcastic here, Roger. It depends on whether the person complaining and being aggrieved is a Christian.
You mean a zealot?
No, a Christian.
Just a Christian?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Christian in this country and you're aggrieved by something, you win. Jesus is the ultimate trump card in this burgeoning theocracy.
Well, I'm sure that.
Well, okay, no. I painted too broad. Because, for instance, there are Christians who object to mountaintop removal. They don't win. Mm-hmm. They're the wrong kind of Christian. If you're a Christian who is trying to push women back into the Bronze Age, you win. If you're a Christian who is trying to keep women from who are bearing children in the womb and you're trying to keep their babies in utero from being poisoned by the toxic dust that flies off of mountaintop removal operations, you don't win.
So much for equal protection under the law.
Well, no, they don't like that thing in the first place.
No. Well, I do agree that there is that element of respect for certain types of religious views. I count myself, and long have, although I'm an atheist, I count myself as a follower of the teachings of the ostensible historical figure Jesus. At least what I've learned of what the guy ostensibly propounded, because
you're talking about the existential parts of his message.
Yeah, so to the extent that he was offering a blueprint for cooperative anarchy as a model for human society, which is, I think, essentially what he was trying to do. Am I allowed to consider myself a Christian?
Not within most dogmas, because you have to believe all the magical hoo-ha too.
Well, is there any evidence at all that that this guy that they call Jesus? I won't go to the question of whether he existed.
Historical evidence for his existence.
Okay, no historical evidence. Is there anything to suggest that the cult of personality aspect of his ostensible teachings originated with him?
Absolutely not. In fact, if you engage in, and a great place to go if you want to learn about this kind of thing, is the work of Bart Ehrman, Ehrman, and his attempt to open the world of textual criticism to lay readers. No, practically everything and I'm talking about the first three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. John gets really out there. Just about everything in there was written in such a way that it could be back referenced to some prophecy in the Old Testament so as to prove that he was in fact Messiah.
Very calculated.
Absolutely, and they had they had 35, 40 years to do it. Most people don't know, for instance, and I don't mean to turn this into Prayer Meeting Wednesday.
No.
But most people don't know, for instance, that the oldest books in the New Testament are not the Gospels. They are the letters that are ascribed to Paul. And I think the oldest one is from about 45 of the Common Era, which would mean he wrote it within about 12 years of the crucifixion, if indeed it took place. And those are the earliest tenets of so-called Christianity, which was then just known as the Way, that we have, and that's where it becomes a death cult, which it is.
Well, now, I'm really glad I asked you about this. I won't necessarily delve further right now. But it sounds like your historical and critical sleuthery and that of others has pretty much indicated then that there are signs that the cult of personality thing, in fact, likely did not originate from ostensible sermons and speakings of the figure referred
well,
to
what,
as Jesus.
What Yeshua is trying to do, and understand, that name, Yeshua, and Texas Betsy can correct me if I'm wrong, within that culture and in that time in ancient Palestine, was like being named John or Bill. I mean, it's super common. So there were, I am sure, at the time, lots of Yeshuas. But there was only one that was Yeshua bar Yusuf. Or maybe there were, maybe it narrows down and there were a dozen of those.
Yeshua bar Yusuf.
Yeah. Yeshua, son of Jesus, son of Joseph. But it's kind of like Osama bin Laden. It's the same. It's the same linguistic structuring and familial kind of, you know, whatever. But the teachings he was part of. And another good book, if you're into this to read, is the book Zealot, which came out in the last year and I think caused. It caused Bill O'Reilly to have a baby or something. But the time period in which all of this happens is a time of great social upheaval, great unrest, great frustration, not just with the Roman occupation, but with the but with the incredibly stratified, ossified temple structure that ran so much of Jewish life in that era at that time. I mean, we read the Gospels, and we have no clue for the context. We say, for instance, you see the business about Jesus driving the money changers out of the temple. Well, that was a commercial enterprise there, and the temple priests were making a fortune. They had wealth like John Hagee and Pat Robertson have wealth, and it was this class conscious objection that got him in trouble. The Sanhedrin. The governing body of the temple, they didn't come after him when he was out there healing lepers and causing the blind to see and the lame to walk. Hell, that happened all the time. I mean, you weren't worth your salt as an itinerant semi-literate rabbi if you weren't out there healing the sick and causing the lame to walk and the blind to see. They didn't come after him for that. They came after him when he came after the money.
Well, Bob, it seems like we are still going down this road. And that's fine. This is very interesting to me. The question arises to me. Okay, if what he was challenging was an existing corrupted economic structure that he felt was antithetical to certain values. And if the business of doing healing and so forth did not particularly set him apart, then what might have motivated the formation of a cult of personality around him, beginning, it sounds like, some 45 years after his execution, if such things happened, because I'm just curious, was it in fact inflamed by the kind of confrontation of social injustices that Jesus or Yeshua was appearing to challenge? Because it's hard for me to imagine that that kind of sort of revolutionary energy, having survived over a period of decades and then blossoming into a cult of personality around a name. Or was there something else afoot? Did somebody see a business opportunity of some kind here?
Well, you can. Okay, so I mentioned that Paul's letters are the oldest books in the New Testament. And I really don't want to just lose the whole Horn Family Congregation commune over this.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
But Paul was, well, first of all, his name was Saul, but he ran afoul of the authorities after he turned on them. Okay, he felt which way the wind was blowing. And saw this little Yeshua cult that had formed, and it was still a Jewish cult. Okay, it was not separate from. It was absolutely within the Jewish traditional structure. And after Yeshua is crucified, his brother James becomes the head of the Jesus Church. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, however, sees that it's never going to, because he has this vision, he sees that it's never going to really grow like he knows that it could if it was properly marketed. And at the time, you know, the Jesus cult was open to having, heathens, Gentiles, whatever, in, but they had to convert to Judaism. And they had to keep with the law and the prophets. And Paul said, no. And Paul was Jewish. Saul, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No. And so there's this big split. I mean, there, and it's documented inside the book of Acts. There's this big split between the Jesus Church at Jerusalem, which is basically the core leadership is Peter and James, and Paul, who's out there just marketing it as he goes along. And he's saying... the dietary rules no longer apply. Hey, you want a pulled pig barbecue sandwich? You eat a pulled pig barbecue sandwich because Jesus still loves you. Because he's up there at the right hand of God. And it's all about what he did for you when he got murdered and not about all the stuff that he taught. Yeah, for instance, Paul, in all of Paul's writings, there is no reference to a virgin birth. Now, you'd think a guy who was writing his first letter 12 years after the crucifixion would maybe mention something like that. Because they don't just happen every day. But he doesn't. The only thing that matters to Paul is the crucifixion, the snuff scene, okay? Everything else is fluffing. And he says, you don't have to be circumcised. Please, Jesus didn't want that. Jesus loves you. And so something entirely different begins to develop, and it develops... In the Levantine and Asia Minor area of what was then Greece, and it makes it over into the Attic Peninsula and the Peloponnese and Corinth, the Isthmus, and it begins to flower there, and within that flowering, all of a sudden, things begin to happen to Jesus. He gets done to him. What happens to all hero religions within that cultural framework? Early art, you know, lo and behold, there's Apollo. Guess who gets rendered as Apollo as the church begins to blossom in Asia Minor and Greece? Jesus. Guess who gets rendered, guess who starts painting, gets starting painted looking like Zeus? His daddy, mm-hmm. Jehovah.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, Bob, I love that I got you off on this tangent. And let's come back to the horrors of the Supreme Court.
I was kind of hoping we would loop back.
Yes, let's do. But I do have one last question, and that is how is it that you took up an examination to the degree that you obviously have of this stuff? Was it for the sake of trying to figure out how to deal with all the Jesus freaks in your area and that you confront, or was there a fascination with the history of this that got you studying it? How did it happen?
First of all, I was raised on the Bible. My mother and grandmother were devout Christians, and they weren't the kind of Christians who, they took that line from Proverbs about study to show thyself approved seriously. I mean, the night before Saturday night, my mother would spend doing her homework on the Sunday school lesson for the next day, reading every translation she could find to really get at the core of what the verse being studied was, and that's the way I was brought up.
Kind of diligent study from your mom.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
So then I go off to college, and I begin, and you know, my mind opens. And for instance, the Southern Baptist Church commissioned a survey, and they found out that their young people, and I was raised a Southern Baptist, their young people, as soon as they get out in the world and start studying things, never come back to church.
Uh-huh.
Because they find out that they have been lied to. And you know what? Even if you're 18 years old, if you find out that somebody's been lying to you for 18 years, it really has a profound impact on you. So I studied. And then then my fascination with, you know, with textual stuff was born in the summer of 1985, when I was desperate in summer session to find 3 stinking credits just to get my sorry ass graduated. And I couldn't get into pottery class, and I couldn't get into anything. And the last thing that was open was a course taught by a brilliant man named Manfred Meitzen, who turned out to be just a wild-eyed right-winger, but my God, what a professor he was, called the Synoptic Gospels in the Religion Department at West Virginia University, Harvard on the Mon.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it, and it was the most wonderful class I had ever had, because it was like getting college credit for doing all that stuff that my mother had taught me to do on Saturday night before Sunday school the next day. But the thing was, he didn't teach it from a proselytic standpoint. He taught it from the standpoint, he taught textual criticism, and he would,
right.
and nobody taught Greek at WVU. I'd had a bunch of Latin, but he would sit there and he would write the words out in Greek and talk about what they meant versus what it didn't mean, and how the text had been changed and altered over time. And we learned about the source gospel that is commonly referred to as Q, from which Matthew, Mark, Luke, and the Gospel of Thomas all come. Nobody's ever seen a copy of Q. There's no word. We don't know that one even exists anymore. But by laying each of those four gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Thomas, side by side, we can get an idea. We can reconstruct, if you will, what Q looked like. And then just to find out that the extent to it, you know, this isn't the inspired word of God. This is hagiography. It's not even biography. It's not history. It's hagiography. It is an attempt through telling a life to convert people to a way of thinking and believing.
Well, this begs the question: if this guy was teaching this level of critical thinking to his students by using a comparative textual reading as a model, and it happened to be this one, how in the world could he have persisted in his own adherence to a kind of to right wing ways of seeing the world?
He was a real scholar. He was a real academic.
Thinkers be right wingers?
Yes, this guy was. I mean, he was forever publishing letters to the editor in the local newspaper about how awful liberals are and blah 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 blah. he kept it completely compartmentalized. I mean, the first day of the class, he said, "I want you to understand, this is a state-funded institution. This is a course in religion in the religion department. I will not, in any wise, however, tolerate any proselytization. And I promise I will not proselytize you."
Fascinating that a that a man of right-wing views would be able to do that degree of compartmentalization, but maybe that's what he had to do to be able to maintain his own cosmic egg, as it were.
And the fact of the matter is what he was a professor. What he was not—he was not defined by his ideology. He was defined by his search for academic rigor. A few years later, it just broke my heart. A few years later, he and his wife were killed. They were touring. They were touring the country on their Harley Davidson, and somebody ran through an intersection and splattered them all over a road in Arkansas.
Oh, well, that's too bad that happened. Bob, thank you for letting me take you off on this crazy tributary into wherever it led us. Going back to the Supreme Court, are you well apprised of what's going on around Harris v. Quinn?
Enlighten me.
Well, what Harris v. Quinn is a case that essentially was asked for by the court a couple of years ago when examining another issue. It was a complaint against the SEIU that was queued up to the Supreme Court, and in it I believe it was Alito called for a case to be brought along the lines of the one that now arose in Illinois, where a person in the SEIU's home care workers union there decided that she did not want to be a part of the union, challenged the fair share aspect of opting out of the union but still paying some dues to, as opposed to a right-to-work environment where not even the fair share dues are required. In Illinois, they are. What this case could conceivably do would be to establish right-to-work at least the precedent of the land, greatly weaken the possibility of public employee unions to continue to be economically viable. And the decision on that case is probably going to be coming down on Monday.
Yes, okay, it is huge. It could very well spell the end of unions as we know them. Now, if you take a long look at what a gang of hypocrites it will make them out to be, because here in this McCullen case, they're saying that the rights of Christian groups trump the individual rights of an innocent person trying to get medical attention. On the other hand, there's a possibility that they will rule that the rights of an individual to not pay dues trumps the right of other workers who wish to remain banded together for purposes of collective bargaining and group dynamics.
It could go that far.
Yeah.
It could almost amount to the banning of public employee unions.
Yes. Do you have any doubt whatsoever how Fat Tony falls on this, or how Slappy Thomas or Sammy Alito, who approves of shooting unarmed black youths who are 30 feet away and climbing a fence, shooting them in the back of the head? Do you have any doubt how he's going to land on this? Any doubt on old Balls and Stripes Roberts?
Alito is the number one enemy of unions on the court.
Well,
it's his bailiwick.
I have read actually one piece out there that says he may be the one who saves this case, which would be really freaky. I would not go to Harris in Reno and place that bet myself, but you know, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, this Supreme Court has been legislating. It's all fine when the right wingers legislate from the bench for some reason or other.
Right, but if one of ours does it, it's judicial activism.
Good God. Well, I know this. My heart goes out to people humbly trying to make a body decision about the future of their own bodies. My life has unfortunately entailed the experience of a couple of abortions, and both of those decisions were incredibly wrenching and painful decisions, not just for the female involved, but for me too. And I'll never forget accompanying my wife into the Planned Parenthood after we made a decision that I think we regret in hindsight, to not proceed with the pregnancy that she had at that time, and being very nearly assaulted as we tried to get through the door, by these zealots who screamed at us and showed us in all kinds of crazy images, and I feel motivated to take my video recording devices and my body, such as it is, and offering myself as an escort to help protect people going into these places from these crazies now. I mean, how severely endangered is my life if I'm attempting to be an escort?
No one can answer that question, Roger. I don't know what these Christian creepers are capable of. Mm-hmm. You know, they shoot abortion doctors. More than one. They have murder in their hearts.
Well, I sure think that this is a pretty appalling decision today. There are many appalling decisions to stare at, but for some reason this one motivated me to pick up the phone. One last note about the religion thing. I think I shared with you the anecdote of how it was that I came to be an atheist, and it absolutely aligns with your description of how many Southern Baptist young people find out that they're being lied to and then don't return to the fold. For me, I was confronted by a religious zealot at the age of 3 who told us lies about God, and I figured out, I told you the longer version on my very first call to the show back about 9 months ago. And I figured out as I listened to this woman and in a day or two of reflection afterwards, at the age of 3, that this woman and the stuff she was talking about God and Judgment Day and so forth was lying. And that was the end of my pliability for any talk of God from then on. That was it. So, yes, being lied to about these things is a big turnoff, I assure you.
And they can't talk about it without lying. Just like
I just thought of that fact too. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like with anything involving a woman's right to choose the direction of her own fate, they cannot. They'll try. We want to end abortion because this doctor who took some acid said that abortions cause breast cancer and the heartbreak of psoriasis. See, we've got a report. But if you peel it back one layer, and besides, Jesus doesn't like it. Right? Yeah. It's always, they have to lie. It is in them. It is of them. It is essential to their nature that they lie.
Well,
but just remember that it's okay for them to lie because Jesus loves them and forgives them when they do. And it's okay to lie as long as you're trying to bring people to salvation.
I guess lying is viewed by people trying to maintain certain types of power structures as a very useful tool.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Remember the old adage, Roger. A lie can get around the world before the truth can get its shoes on.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I've hogged enough phone time. Thanks for hanging in there. Love your filibobster. Sometimes they're just downright poetry, I tell you. I was marveling at the filibobster last Friday. Just something else, buddy.
Oh, God, I don't even know what that one was anymore.
Well, you were telling us about the heart-wrenching experience of the destruction of your homeland.
Oh, West Virginia, yes.
Removal.
West Virginia Day, absolutely. Yes.
And the depth to which you evoked the beauty of the place in the process of describing its destruction was one of the more powerful pieces of prose / poetry that I've ever heard.
Well, I love the fact that you refer to it as poetry. I mean, I'm deeply touched by that, Roger. I am.
Well, I think it's true. I think that you have an immense power of the spoken word, and you know that. And when you're really running on all 12 cylinders, you're spitting out live poetry, man. It's amazing.
Well,
it's
that just touches me deeply. It really, really does, Rob.
It's just goddamn true. On to the next one, Bob. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks, Roger. You have a good evening. Great talking to you.
You too. Great talking to you too. Bye bye.
Roger calling from Minneapolis. That's kind of how conversation radio works, you know. If you want to jump into the conversation, you are more than welcome so to do. The number is 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. An update. Thank you to Keith. Keith just took a big, big, big bite out of the fundraising hole with a note saying, "I need you, Bob, to maintain my sanity." I'm sure others feel the same way. Thank you, Keith. We got a note in from our buddy, Robert in Australia. He says, "How many is 6.5K followers on TuneIn? Can we get $1 from each? That'd be nice. That'd be wonderful." Thank you, Robert. And also, Diane of Kansas Stan, who is presently hiding out in Rochester. She helped out as well, so that puts us now at, well, dadgummit, we've only got $35 to go to get out of the hole. Isn't that wonderful? And thank you as well to Asa, who got us started, and thank you to Thomas. Thank you very much, one and all. $35 and we're done, and we've got a fighting chance going downhill to the end of June. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Note coming in from Kate, going back to what I mentioned about the creeper in the subway that got escorted to the police by the woman he was creeping on. Subject line, subway rubbings. Ooh. Ooh. Kate says, "Oh, this reminds me of my years living in Brooklyn back in the 60s while working at Kennedy. A flight attendant for Pan Am taught me, an innocent little wide-eyed farm girl from Montana, how to ride the trains. She gave me a hat pin from her uniform cap and showed me where to stow it in my sleeve. When accosted by a rubbing, I simply pulled out my pin and jabbed the closest part of his anatomy. I never feared for my safety. No one ever suspected." Well, maybe the women who were relieved that they could get home without being accosted by another pervert. My question didn't get answered. Does one need to be so that was your question. Does one need to be licensed to carry a taser? That's going to vary by state to state, Kate. At least a realistic-looking squirt gun full of vinegar. That self-defense verdict makes me want to stalk the Planned Parenthood clinics and support my little sisters. Maybe I should just sit here and mind my own business, huh? No, don't sit there and mind your own business. You're entirely too good, Kate, at being proactive with these things. On a state by state, I can't say with certainty. I mean, you'd have to research the state where you are. Concealed carry generally applies to firearms. And squirt guns are not real guns. And even if they were, many states have open carry laws. I mean, it's the law of the state of West Virginia that if you want to, you can sling your AR-15 Freedom Protector right over your shoulder and march down the middle of Main Street, and that be the only thing you're wearing. Of course, they might take you in for public nakedness, but they won't take you in for threatening the health, safety, and well-being of everybody around you with your freedom protector. But I don't think, no. Pepper spray either, for that matter. And if one is openly carrying one's taser or one's pepper spray, where's the problem? Yeah. 15 minutes before the hour, like I said, the phone number through this thorn in the side Thursday, 304-574-8178. Just by way of an update, let's see, who was it? Oh, okay, so Pat Robertson was mad at heathen tattooers. That other really boring guy was mad at people for watching The Naked on Game of Thrones. Let's check in with a youth minister. See where he is.
Man, I get the question all the time. Well, is drinking alcohol right or wrong? Is drinking alcohol right or wrong? Okay, here's the deal. I spent 6 years as a juvenile probation officer. I have a pre-med degree from Tarleton State University. And I will give you my professional opinion on that question. Is drinking alcohol right or wrong? I don't know. Because, see, you're asking me a moral question. It's how you live. It's what you believe. It's the way you're raised. It's your faith. So I don't know. Now, is it good or bad? I can tell you that. I'm not going to go into all the details. But here's the basis. It doesn't matter if it's right or wrong, good or bad. The question is it holy? Is it holy? Man, that's what the whole mission is all about. Is it holy? Not whether it's right or wrong. People are always like, well, Jesus drank wine. And then you have the other group saying, well, no, it wasn't wine. It was grape juice that wasn't fermented yet. Who cares? Because you have to ask the question, is it holy? Legal drinking ages in America right now, 21 years old. The Bible says obey the law of the land. If the law of the land is 21 years old, I don't care who you are. If you're younger than 21, it is not holy. So if you want to live that faith, and I'm not talking about judgmental stuff, I'm talking about living what God has called you to be, it's all about, is it holy? And that's why I'm excited about the website on isitholy.com. We have all the questions. Same way with all the synthetic drugs. Man, you go down to the grocery store, there's a little Stop and Rob on the corner. You can get something that mimics marijuana. You can get something that mimics speed. You can get something that mimics crack. Well, it's legal. So if it's legal, it's okay. It's okay if I take this stuff. It's okay if I smoke some incense. It's okay if I do this stuff. Man, the question is not, is it holy? The question, is it okay? The question is it holy? Man, you start asking yourself that question, I guarantee you, you'll start getting the right answer.
Yeah, okay. That's Justin Luckadoo. He talks to kids a lot. And in fact, he's a bigot, and he's a misogynist, and he's got Bronze Age views of the role of women. In fact, as Ned Twyman notes over at Americans Against the Tea Party, last year a group of students to whom he was paid to speak found him so obnoxious that they created a hashtag called Luckadouche. Yeah. No, not Luckadoo. Look. His name is Luckadoo. Luckadoo. Kind of like that preacher from Joplin, Missouri. What was his name? Mooney Hooey or whatever? Yeah. Well, Luckadouche. And so he's out there, you know, is it holy? Is it holy? Is it holy? Is it holy? Here, let me get my newscaster voice. Indiana police say they found Justin Luckadoo pulled over on the side of the road early Tuesday morning. He claimed he had pulled over to take a nap, but authorities said that the car smelled of alcohol and could see vomit on the passenger seat. After failing a field sobriety test and recording a blood alcohol content of 0.07, police arrested him on a charge of public intoxication. On the day of his arrest, he had been scheduled to speak with a middle school student, with a group of middle school students, at a teen power camp. Is it holy? Sounds like it might just be putrid. sorry to Linda, Scott, sorry. I know, it's dinner hour. Dadgummit. Yeah. Oh, we've got plenty to work with this evening. As I mentioned, $35 to go, and thank you, Glenn. It is now $25 to go. Thank you indeed very, very much. Marty noticed something that Brother Lookadoo said, the little stop and rob on the corner. Marty asking, did he really say that or am I hallucinating? No, I heard it too. A little stop and rob. Hey, don't you love them? Aren't they hilarious? I mean, no, they're terrifying. They're not funny at all. Ron and Raleigh with a query. Where in the Second Amendment does it say guns? Doesn't it say the right to keep and bear arms? How come I can't open carry my katana or my nunchucks? I've wondered the same thing. If I decide, given my Scottish heritage, to put on a kilt and strap on a claymore. Probably shouldn't say strap on. And go, because I'm worried about the violence in America, and I go to the local, no, I'm not going to use that phrase, just go to the store for a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk. Am I going to get arrested? Yes. You know why? Because the sword is in a scabbard and is therefore deemed to be concealed, even though it's got a great big two-handled hilt that clearly notes that it's a freaking sword. But I have. Ron, I have. I've given serious thought. I mean, is there no freedom of choice in the bearing of arms? How about an elegant little rapier? Or a nice saber? I mean, really, when you get right down to it, claymores and cutlasses and things like that, they're just too bulky. Scimitar? Nah. But, yeah, a nice saber. Yeah, that could be. And or a katana. I think the whole Japanese get up with and the elegant katana. I like that a lot. Shut up, Ron. Woo-wee, says Ron. Bob, I'd pay to see that kilt and claymore action. Shut up, Ron. Anyone having a red Board of the Rings will remember that line. Shut up, he said gravely. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, what's happening, Kevin?
Not much. Per our conversation yesterday, I did a little investigating. And Chappie's district yesterday, the 6,600 people that voted, equated to approximately one-third of the eligible Republican voters in his district. But it gets better, because in the whole state, Republicans and Democrats alike, of everybody that could vote in the state in the primaries yesterday, 17.1% of the people decided to come out and vote.
Do you find that just terrifying, Kevin? Because I do.
Yeah. I was thinking of it in terms of this context. Basically, 1,000 people, 17% of that would be 170 people. So basically, 170 people decided who would be representing the other 830 of us that didn't vote. So if you want your fate to be decided by the 170 people that went out to vote yesterday, And you see where I'm going with this, because Chappie's people were obviously inclined to get out and vote.
Highly motivated.
Do what?
They were highly motivated.
Yes. So, if they were highly motivated, but the Republicans with common sense weren't, this is what we get. And so when the general election comes around, will it be the same thing? Because I know I'm going out to vote, because I don't want someone like Chappie being, he won't be my representative, but in essence he will be, because he will be a congressman from Colorado. Or a senator.
Yeah, see, I favor getting out the vote, and I hesitate to say this because I know that you deal with disability issues. You know, is it possible to help get out the vote?
Yeah, I'm planning on working on that. I am going to make myself available to whatever candidate, and if I, with my disability, the transportation issues that go along with it, and then the other physical issues that go along with it, if I can get out and vote, people that don't have these impairments darn sure can get out and vote. And in a lot of cases, it's as simple as mailing a ballot back in. What's hard about that? So, you know. But if it takes me putting myself out there and saying, hey, I can't even drive a car, I can't see, but I'm going to vote, you know.
Right, the stakes are really high, Kevin, and I don't think it's dirty politics to try to alert people that, you know, hey, this guy says Obamacare causes cancer. This guy says the FCC visually rapes children. This guy, you know, this guy should not be allowed out of the home, let alone into the state house.
No. And so, anyway, I just found that, you know, 33% of the Republicans in his district went out and voted. But when I heard that 17.1% of all eligible voters in the state went out and voted yesterday, that just blew me away. Because I don't care how bad the candidates are, certainly we can do better than
take it further. Consider this. 17% of the Republican electorate came out to vote. That means because the vote was very nearly half and half. That means that 9% of the electorate selected the Republican nominee. When 9% of the people are doing the electing, then there's nothing about that process that you can remotely even call vaguely democratic.
No.
Little d.
Except for the fact that those people chose to vote, and I'm not saying you personally, but you didn't. And therefore, because you chose not to vote, you get someone like Klingenschmitt or Bob Bragg.
And even if you've got big turnout, that's still no guarantee, Kevin. I favor the Australian system of compulsory voting. You've got to vote. But again, because we have such a twisted understanding of free speech and free political conduct, that could never fly here because people, you know, there'd probably be a 9-0 decision by the Supreme Court saying, well, that violates people's free speech rights. You know, silence is a right. So, you know, you've got a right to remain silent, which apparently would extend to voting. But remember, you do not have a right to be not God-bothered.
No. Yep. you know, back 5 years ago, whatever it was, when they showed the people there in Iraq voting, and of course I couldn't see it, but I had it described to me about the woman, that there was one sign of a woman waving her finger where she had...
Yeah, the purple finger.
Right. That image is ingrained in my mind because if someone in circumstances where she could face possible death just by standing in the line to vote, and she went out and voted, we here in America had no excuse for not voting where it's so easy. And yes, there are things that are being done to prevent you from voting, but put up against an IUD that may explode if you try to go vote in Iraq, this is easy. And it just blows them. I don't know what else to say. And I hear people say, well, you know, it's pointless to vote because they're all bad, or I don't know enough about the issues. Really? You know, if you just bury your head in the sand, the problems don't go away. They're still there. You just haven't done anything about them, and therefore it's gotten worse. And so, yeah, I'm going to call up a few campaigns, maybe the Democratic Party here in the state, and try to work on that, get out the vote, because 17% just is unreal to me. And it was a mail-in ballot, too, Bob. That's the thing that's really...
No. You got a 17% voter turnout among the Republicans on a mail-in ballot.
Yep.
You know what? I'll bet you more people respond to the Publisher's Clearinghouse thing.
Sure. Now, that wasn't 17% among the Republicans. That was 17% of the state, Republicans and Democrats alike.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
It was 33% in Chaffee's district of Republicans. But the state was 17% of all registered voters didn't, that was all that voted. So what, 83% didn't bother. Threw the thing in the trash. You know, and yet, those, I guarantee you a good many of those are grumbling about their rights being taken away, or the candidates aren't good enough, or whatever. Well, if you don't vote, you know, and candidates know this, I guarantee you, Mr. Klingenschmidt definitely considered the fact that no more than a third of the registered Republican voters were going to get out and vote. And so if it was half and half, all he needed was a little over 15% to get elected. If you follow what I'm saying.
I do.
And with those kind of odds, I might as well get on the ballot. Because what? Maybe the next city council election, 5% of the people will get out and vote? You know? I mean, it's just disgusting. And yet, the people that were highly motivated were the same people that you find in an abortion clinic screaming at the women as they go through the door. And,
yep.
You know.
Yeah.
So, this thing with Luckadoo, is that a new story, the one you were just reading?
Yeah.
Jesus. Unreal.
They charged him with public intox instead of DUI because he wasn't operating the motor vehicle. He was passed out.
What state is he in?
That story is from Talibandiana.
Because I know in most states, if you're in the car, even if you're not driving, it's a DUI.
Well, so far it's a public intox bust.
Man. Unreal. Well, is he still scheduled to speak? Did they reschedule it? You know?
Yeah, I can't talk to the Teen Power Camp today. I'm kind of in jail.
Yeah. But he'll be forgiven. Oh, well. Anyway, I just wanted to call about that. That number just blew me away, and I had to share it with someone. So, anyway, that's all I got.
Well, I appreciate you. Appreciate you doing the follow up.
No problem. Anytime.
All right, Kevin. You take care.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Yeah, as Larry noted in the chat room. 17% voter turnout raises issues of legitimacy. So we've reached the two-thirds of the way point. We are $25 away from reaching our fundraising goal this evening. Thank you one and all. Thank you so much to Keith and to Asa and to Diane and to Robert and to Glenn and... making sure I'm not missing anybody, and to Thomas, thank you, one and all, because this is how we keep this going. Now, let's take a break. You know how I feel about the Green News Report. It just rolled in, so we will. We'll check in with the Green News Report. Brad and Desi do such a wonderful job. Don't worry, I won't play another creepy misogyny song. I'll take a powder on that. Let's just see how this goes. This is Conversation Radio. We will return to the conversation as soon as we return to the... not going anywhere. You know what I mean. 304-574-8178. This is The Horn.
It's Thursday, June 26, 2014.
It's pretty rare that you encounter people who say that the problem of carbon pollution is not a problem. But generally, they don't just say, no, I don't believe anything scientists say. Except where? In Congress.
The gloves are off. President Obama now just openly ridiculing climate change deniers.
This is just brutal, Carol. This rain is incessant. It is not stopping.
Extreme weather hits the World Cup.
Pregnant women or those that are going to become pregnant soon should be very concerned by the data.
Pesticides linked to autism again. Plus,
well, forget global warming. The U.S. has actually been cooling since the 1930s, but you wouldn't have known that because someone faked the numbers. The shocking new report ahead.
The shocking fact that Fox News is lying to you again.
All of that and more ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
There is really only one solution to get Republicans to do something about climate change. Barack Obama must become a global warming denier.
Yep, that'll do it. This is your Green News Report.
He must ride up to Congress in a Hummer with a gun rack and tell them, I was wrong and you were right.
Okay, Desi Doyen, well, it looks like you have got some splainin' to do. I was watching Fox News this week, and I have learned about your entire scam.
1934, that's the hottest year on record in the United States, at least until NASA scientists fudged the numbers to make 1998 the hottest year to overstate the extent of global warming.
They fudged the numbers? Desi Doyen, you and your greeny lefty tree-hugging friends are busted by Fox News.
Fortunately, Fox News is completely wrong. They can't seem to get anything right. Now, the blogger that they're quoting is a birther whose work is so shoddy that even prominent climate change deniers are criticizing it.
The numbers are the numbers, Desi Doyen. NASA has fudged them.
No, they didn't. All they did was reanalyze their data, like scientists do, to take into account the way the data has been gathered differently over the last 90 years. For example, temperatures used to be recorded in the afternoon. Now they're recorded in the morning. So the data was adjusted to take that into account. And they published their data for peer review, which is something that the deniers never do.
Yeah, well, some guy using an alias on the internet says they fudged them, and that was good enough for Fox News. It's good enough for me. What other fudging do you have for us today, Desi?
Well, now President Obama is just openly ridiculing climate change deniers and their friends in Congress.
Then most recently, they ducked the question. They said, hey, I'm not a scientist. Which really translates into, I accept that man-made climate change is real, but if I say so out loud, I will be run out of town by a bunch of fringe elements that think climate science is a liberal plot. So I'm going to just pretend like, I don't know, I can't read.
Actually, what he means there is that these Congress people will be run out of town by the Koch brothers and their millions who will challenge them in primaries.
He was speaking at the annual gathering of the League of Conservation Voters this week, and he's calling for a generational project to cut carbon dioxide emissions and prepare the economy for the coming impacts of climate change.
The real test, of course, will be what he does or doesn't do concerning the Keystone XL pipeline.
In other news, yet another study concludes that the class of pesticides suspected of causing the massive decline of honeybees in the northern hemisphere is also killing a wide variety of other organisms important to food production. The Worldwide Integrated Assessment found the evidence is unequivocal that neonicotinoid pesticides, the most widely used pesticides in the world, accumulate and persist in the soil, impacting entire ecosystems, killing beneficial organisms that are important to the world food supply. Meanwhile, another study further confirms the link between autism and pesticide exposure during pregnancy. Researchers at the University of California at Davis found moms living within a mile of crops treated with three common classes of pesticides during pregnancy have a two-thirds increased risk of having babies with autism or developmental delay.
Two-thirds increased risk?
Yes.
Wow.
They say more research is needed to establish a direct causal link, but they also said, quote, pesticides are one of the toxicants that appear to have the strongest association with autism. Finally, just as happened with the Olympics, extreme weather is complicating World Cup soccer.
Nearly 3 inches of rain have fallen so far, making this the rainiest day in Recife.
Torrential rains forced soccer fans to abandon their cars and wade through miles of flooded streets to reach the stadium where the U.S. played a match against Germany. June is normally a dry month in Brazil, but in just 6 hours, this storm broke the record for the rainiest day in the host city. Climate scientists have predicted for decades that global warming will bring an increase in extreme weather events.
Warm weather and not enough snow during the Winter Olympics, and wet weather during the dry season for the World Cup.
That's right.
This is all working out just great. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report stay on your airwaves and to continue connecting the climate dots, which almost no one else ever does. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Go!
Everybody dance. I love the Green News Report. By the way, just a little heads up, if you want to get involved in the conversation, 304-574-8178, that's not the heads up. This is the heads up. They really are trying to press the issue of climate change. Some members of the Democratic Party are in the Congress. Chief among them is Sheldon Whitehouse, senator from Rhode Island and a genuinely seemingly decent human being. Enter Joe Manchin. Oh, Jesus. The ramen with the flavor boost packet was doing a bit of a dance after I read that this earlier today. Ken Ward Jr. reporting at the Charleston Gazette. Senator Joe Manchin is joining with one of the Senate's strongest advocates for action to reduce greenhouse gas pollution to seek what Manchin calls common ground solutions to address climate change, but also protect West Virginia's coal industry. You know where this is going, right? Senator Whitehouse and Senator Manchin had what's called a colloquy on the floor of the Senate yesterday, talking back and forth to one another about climate change. Now, remember, Joe Manchin ran for that Senate seat by running an ad on TV in West Virginia in which he took a rifle, probably a 270, maybe a 708, or maybe a .30-06, with a scope on it, and put the crosshairs of the scope on a stack of paper that had been nailed to a tree and was prominently displayed on screen as cap and trade bill. And then he murdered the bill. I'll kill cap and trade. I will. And then when he ran again, he did another ad in which he said, no, I bet you think I'm going to, and he's holding a rifle again. I bet you think I'm going to, no, I already killed that. During the colloquy, Joe Manchin said, we're going to fix this together, this being climate change. Ken Ward notes that Sheldon Whitehouse has delivered 72 straight weekly Senate floor speeches urging action on global warming and climate change. And his partner, and I'm not being critical of Senator Whitehouse, I respect the man. But I would like to suggest to Senator Whitehouse that maybe we in West Virginia know Joe a little bit better than he knows Joe. And that if I were Senator Whitehouse, I would never, ever, ever let Joe walk behind me. Because Joe Manchin is, first, foremost, and always going to protect the coal industry. Because he represents the coal industry. He does not represent anyone in West Virginia personally. He represents the coal industry. He was sent there by the coal industry, and he is given his marching orders by the coal industry. Now, meanwhile, remember that Joe Manchin has also sworn vengeance on the EPA. Joe Manchin has also co-authored and co-introduced a bill with Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana Stan, calling upon President Obama to quit killing all of them jobs and okay the Keystone XL pipeline, even though it doesn't run anywhere near either Louisiana Stan or West Virginia Stan. Even though the Keystone XL pipeline will cause gas prices at the pump to go up, even though the Keystone XL pipeline won't actually deliver any fuel to the United States, but will instead be put on boats to go to China and other points. There were some telling moments. Senator Manchin said that climate change is probably driven by the big population the world has, not because we've been burning fossil fuels like no tomorrow for the last 150 years or so. Right. Here's what he said about climate change, Joe Manchin. There's no doubt that 7 billion people have impacted our world's climate. Those who deny that, I believe, are wrong. And he went ahead in the colloquy and got in a pitch for coal. Fossil fuels are, and especially coal. Coal is going to remain a vital part of our energy mix for decades to come. And he got Sheldon Whitehouse to agree with him that fossil fuels, quote, will be a part of America's fuel mix for decades. And then he blamed China for burning so much coal, Joe Manchin did. Never, of course, bothering to mention that lots of Appalachian coal from mountaintop removal operations get on boats, ships, and go to China. But that's not the way he characterized it. It's China burning coal. Mm-hmm. I guess from Chinese coal mines. Not from Australia. Not from Appalachia. Oh, no, 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 no. No. And this, oh, this was the real laugher. Manchin said he was so proud of how much wind energy we've developed in West Virginia. I remember when he described wind energy as the fuel of the future. Future, future, future. Mm-hmm. But here's the part that, here's the part of the story that grabbed me. The two men agreed that they will visit each other's respective states. Joe Manchin said he'll go to Rhode Island and learn about what climate change has done to Rhode Island's commercial fishing industry. In other words, Joe Manchin's going to get a nice trip to Rhode Island, which is a nice place. Sheldon Whitehouse gets the short end of the stick because he promised to come to West Virginia. Anybody want to place any bets? How many mountaintop removal operations do you reckon Joe will arrange for Sheldon Whitehouse to see? I guarantee you this, if he does see one, they'll take him down to that Hobet operation, their mountaintop removal Potemkin village where they've spent millions and millions of millions of dollars and still can't get a tree to grow. I'm pretty sure Joe won't arrange for Sheldon Whitehouse to fly over the largest dam in the Western Hemisphere holding back 9 billion gallons of toxic waste or any of the other more than 100 such dams in this state that all hold together more than more than 100 billion gallons of that toxic waste. I guarantee it. I absolutely do. So I don't know. Do we have any Rhode Island Horn family commune congregation members? If we do, would you do us all a favor, please, down here in Central Appalachia? Would you do the hillbillies a favor? Would you maybe fire off a very nice, polite note to Senator Whitehouse, suggesting that if he does in fact come down to West Virginia, he simply must insist on being shown mountaintop removal active and underway? Will you suggest to him, please, that he ask specifically to see some of the leaky, toxic seas of filth and goo that sit behind these dams made of dirt and rock? Would you ask him, please, to sit down with the leaders of the effort to stop mountaintop removal? And by that, I don't mean the Sierra Club. Ask him to sit down with the AIC campaign. Ask him, in fact, to introduce a companion to the AIC Act in the Senate. Can we do that? Would that be possible? If you're able to do any of that, shoot me a note, please, and just let me know. I don't have to see your letter or anything. BobKincaid@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook or via Twitter. Sure would be helpful. It sure would be. Yeah, Sailor Chick pointing out in the chat room, that coal goes to China, Brazil, Europe, Morocco, all over the world. Yes, it does. There's a lot of it going to Germany now, which makes me sad, because Germany's been doing such a good job with its Energiewende in transitioning to renewables like wind and solar. A lot of it's going to the Netherlands. Japan is ramping up its coal imports. And the hillbillies keep dying and dying and dying. Yeah. See, that's where I get a little bit of an attitude of trying to figure out what it is I owe to China. What right do these nations claim to purchase products that cause people to lose organs before they're 15 years old? On the other hand, and I'm going right to the phones in a second. On the other hand, great news today out of Canada. The Canadian Supreme Court recognized sovereign Aboriginal title for a First Nations group and really, really stuck it to the Harper government. There's reference to it on my Facebook page if you want to go and have a look. Yeah, we will. We'll go to the phones now. We have Will from Chicago. Hey, Will.
Hey, Bob. Hope you're doing well. And it is appropriate that today is indeed Thorn in Our Sides Thursday, because the Supreme Court hasn't only gotten into the area of thorns; they have gotten into the equivalent of entire redwood trees in our sides. I decided to see about some of the news in the wake of the Supreme Court decisions, and the Boston Police Department, according to Reuters, will deploy extra police around the city's abortion clinic starting Friday. As some people may recall, there was a shooting in 1994 at a women's health care clinic there, and I'm afraid there will be violence. So once again, we have a Supreme Court that shows that it is about 1 million light years from reality. And as for the executive recess appointments, well, I suppose that can be lived with if it sets some terms. But the problem is we have a Congress that may be the most dysfunctional since the inauguration of George Washington.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you wholeheartedly, Will, on the dysfunction aspect of it. That's that's kind of procedural, you know. And yeah, I guess their ruling was that Congress has the right to determine what its own schedule is, and Congress has the right to determine what constitutes going into recess. Wasn't that the essence of it?
Pretty much, and to me that's logical enough. It's just that it's going to be hard to replace some of the appointments, and several decisions will be knocked out. But it's the decision concerning the reproductive health clinics that bother me. I'm in Northwest Indiana, and in Hammond on Indianapolis Boulevard, a little bit north of Interstate 80, is a Planned Parenthood clinic. I have never seen protest signs there, but I am worried about the people who work there, because it is very easy to get guns in Indiana. In fact, there's a joke that some gun shops in Indiana do a very brisk business with customers in the city of Chicago, at least according to Chicago Tribune reports, and I'm afraid we are going to see more violence. There have been some reactions to the ruling. The Rude Pundit, who you may have heard of, has suggested protesting churches whose main activity in the political sphere seems to be protesting women's reproductive health clinics. He even took a picture from one Catholic church in Grafton, Massachusetts, 35 miles from Boston, and suggested people pick it. I don't know if that's something people would really want to try, but it might be good for some people to feel what it is like on the other side. This is one of the great problems in our society, Bob. We have many deficits. We talk about the trade deficit. We talk about perhaps a deficit of ideas. But we also have a huge, glaring empathy deficit. It's almost as if some people have decided that they and those who think like them are the only true human beings. When that happens, tragedies occur. See Rwanda as an example. So I'm quite concerned about the Supreme Court. They are postponing the Hobby Lobby ruling till Monday at the end of the month, in which case they'll run out of town. And I am afraid they will likely declare that a corporation, a fictional construct.
You're breaking
not
up.
Not a construct in the way that Mr. Data, the android from Star Trek, the next generation. All right, is this better? Is this better, Bob?
It does seem to be, I hope.
Bob?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. As I was going to say, we now have a Supreme Court that may, on Monday, release a ruling that states a corporation, a non-physical construct, a legal fiction, not a construct like an android such as Mr. Data from Star Trek would be, has not only free speech rights, but religious rights, in which case one would have to wonder what the heck about the religious rights of the people at the company who do not share the religious rights of the owners. I'm afraid that we are in an era where we are seeing the expansion of corporate power at the expense of the individual. Fortunately, we are seeing people wising up and reacting to it, but there is a lot of suffering ahead for us before I think we begin to get things turned around.
What bothers me about the Hobby Lobby case probably most of all is the same thing that bothers me about this McCullen versus Coakley case, and that is it is a thinly veiled expansion of theocracy in this country.
Yes, and as a member of a minority faith who had to deal with everything from being forced to pay taxes under other people's belief systems to the occasional mob of Christians and Muslims who would decide, get them, I have to say no to any attempts to oppose theocracy. James Madison and Thomas Jefferson both rightly were concerned about combining government with religion. Jefferson holding that inserting religion into government corrupts government, and Madison holding that inserting government into religion corrupts religion. And I will agree with the people who said both men proved to be right. And it is, to me, very troubling because I did not want anyone's beliefs or non-beliefs made law. We have survived as a country, as we have done for nigh these 238 years, because we have learned to say there is room for many people in this country. George Washington, for example, wrote a letter to a synagogue in Rhode Island. I do hope that the people listening in Rhode Island will talk to Senator Whitehouse. Perhaps if they are also so moved, they will, and others decide, to donate to the Horn so that you end June out in a grand fashion and perhaps begin July with some real fireworks.
Yeah, that'd be lovely. Well, yes. You know, Will, I feel compelled to make one observation. You know, you mentioned it being a member of a minority faith. You're of course Jewish.
Yes.
I'm a member of a minority non-faith.
Yes, and to me,
and it makes me really nervous. What scares me though, Will, is that the fundamentalists will. And I'm not trying to put this in a negative sense, but more by way of warning. The fundamentalists will protect American Jewry because they fetishize the Jewish faith.
Yes,
it's more wicked than open hostility.
Yes,
I mean, they still think you're going to go to hell because you won't bow a knee to Jesus, but they have to keep you handy so that they can murder Jews when Jesus comes back and tells them to.
Exactly. And here's the thing, I'm willing to fight for my beliefs or the right of others to believe or not to believe as they choose, but I have no desire to die for a theology which I view as utterly bizarre. And as such, I have to hold to the opinion that the only way my rights and safety can be permanently secured as an American citizen is to make sure that the rights and safety of everyone in this country, regardless of who they call themselves, what they believe or don't believe, where they live, that they are safe and secure in their persons and opinions. And this is what I find very troubling about a trend in our politics. We literally have a party which seems to be appealing to a narrower and narrower base, and yet they seem to be very good at getting out the vote, promoting themselves, and getting their agenda passed. And there are lots of reasons why, perhaps not least of which that companies are willing to back them because they are willing to go along with a pro-business agenda.
I think you've expressed it pretty solidly all the way across. The thing is, Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, atheists, everybody who is not Judeo-Christian is at risk from these kinds of decisions.
Yes, and I and those of us in the Jewish faith who tend towards a more liberal or progressive view, such as in the Reform or conservative movements or Reconstructionists, realize that our day of reckoning is merely delayed till they see some event which makes them conclude, aha, this is a fulfillment of prophecy. Quick, grab your gun. It's time to hunt them.
I don't think that's paranoid.
No, it isn't, because I have a friend online who used to post at the Randy Rhodes board, and he's now, I believe, posting at Nicole Sandler's board, and he once said that as a Jew who's very familiar with history as a teacher, actually a professor in Florida, he realizes that to have an awareness of Jewish history is to realize that they may come when you are living in a country you thought was safe and secure, that you now have to flee in utter terror of your lives.
And that's been the history of the Jewish people from the time of the exile to Babylon.
Exactly. So, I mean, it is not paranoia when you see it. And here's the thing. Imagine Ted Cruz as president and his successor. Sorry, I stumbled there.
Happens to me all the time. Don't feel bad.
On Christian dominionist or Christian reconstructionist, which has about as much to do with the Jewish reconstructionism as an aardvark has to do with quantum string mechanics. This person says, we will now define Christianity as the law of the land and suspend the Constitution for some crisis.
Well, consider this. I saw a story, in fact, Tim from L.A. pointed it out to me earlier today on Facebook. Sarah Palin, and I don't even like to mention her name. It's like cheating to do a Sarah Palin story. No, it's shooting whales in barrels. But she's taken to running around wearing a Star of David. And I've been I try to teach our children things, and one of the things that I've come up with a little shorthanded way of addressing issues of blackface or redface or Ferg and I had a conversation about tattooing the other day. And the shorthand statement is that culture is not commodity. you don't go and just co-opt somebody's culture without consent. And if you look at that broadly, it becomes really a topic for serious discussion. There's not much in this country, for instance, that has not begun in the black community. Rock and roll, jazz, almost 100% of the foodways of the South, all the way up to so-called hip hop culture and little white kids running around trying to be OG thugs,
right?
Culture's not commodity.
No.
But what privilege is it that gives Sarah Palin, who is about as Jewish as I am, which is to say not.
I would say about as Jewish as to kosher is to a steak, ham, and cheese bagel.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Exactly. So what is it, what privilege is it that attaches to her that allows her to simply co-opt the essential symbol of well, you know, going back to what, the 11th century? That's about how long the Star of David's been in use.
Yeah, I mean, the oldest symbol is actually the menorah.
Right.
But the Star of David, we're not sure why it became to be called that. It was originally simply an ornamental design. But, I mean, Sarah Palin's sympathizing with the Jewish people is purely a political move, not so much to appeal to Jewish voters, because there aren't that many Jewish Republicans, but rather to the fundamentalists who believe that, the Likudnik vision of Israel is necessary, so there will one day be a war that brings Jesus back to earth, and everything will be like the Left Behind book series, which I have put on my ignore list simply because I can find better things to deal with rather than weird interpretations of a theology that I do not believe in, and that there be no reference to the rapture before, what, 1900? Suffice it to say, Sarah Palin is essentially all about promoting herself.
Yeah, but I guess the larger question that I'm asking, Will, and of course I am designating you as the official spokesman for every Jewish person in America now. Don't feel intimidated or the great weight of the burden on you or anything. I'm being facetious. Why? When Jews are trotted out, which basically they are, as justification for fundamentalist Christian behavior, because, you know, they won't call themselves Christian tradition. It always has to be the Judeo-Christian tradition, as if somehow y'all are responsible for the snake handling and the strychnine swigging. Where's the pushback on that? Is it because of the historical fragility of Jewish place in society, place in culture? Is it because there's relatively a few of y'all and a whole bunch of fundies? What is it?
It may be all of those, plus there's probably a certain element, particularly those who lean more towards a conservative position in the Jewish community, that, okay, fine, we'll use these idiots for our own end. Others are kind of a bit reluctant to speak out or are trying to figure out what a response would be. But, I mean, we have to learn to speak for ourselves. I mean, you may have heard that recently J Street, the pro-Israel, pro-peace group, was not voted into a larger group of Jewish organizations simply because they have a setup kind of like the Senate, where a group that has a post office box and an office and two secretaries is equal to the multi-million member Union for Reform Judaism or the Union Organization for Conservative Judaism. And they were kind of voting out simply because these small groups said they weren't supporting Israel in the right way, and that has led to a storm where the next time that organization meets, there's going to be a huge pushback on changing the rules. Perhaps it's because Jews as a whole have been usually content to live quietly in society.
I mean, it just blows my mind. I mentioned a few nights ago this Nicholas Wade book that Dr. John turned me on to, and in which he makes arguments about, and really, just, you know, to see it in print, and this guy is the New York Times science writer, okay? And he's arguing about, and he's making arguments about why the Jews are good with money.
Yes, and it's a stereotype. I have a friend who's Jewish who is not very good with money, and by that fellow's logic, since I am also part Scottish and Irish on my dad's side, I should be phenomenal with money. If I am, it's because I've had to live cheaply. We have people who are so reliant on the myths they have about other people that they don't take the time to get to know others, and I consider this wrong. I'm enriched by the diversity of this world and the diversity of humanity and the diversity of America. I benefit from knowing others who think differently from I do, who live differently from I do, and yet it sounds that there are still too many who not only want to hold on to their own identity, which is fine and understandable and appropriate. In fact, I would argue the most fundamental right is the right to define oneself. But they are so insecure that they cannot accept identities other than their own, save to use them either for props or as something to point against. And one could argue that for the South, that to a large extent, the culture was defined in opposition to the traditionally oppressed group that there, the African American. Namely, that if you weren't African American, you at least were better off, even if you were as dirt poor. And again, I think one of our great problems is we don't take the time to know people, and this is one of the good things about this network. We have a variety of callers. We have a variety of views. We hear from people as diverse as an L.A. Taxi driver to people living in Vermont or West Virginia. And I think we have to focus on our own unity, and this is why I think we'll defeat the fundamentalists most of all, namely that we realize we have much in common and we are strong. And that day, the fundamentalists will have a choice, either to pursue their own lives and agenda as anyone else does, or to simply put up a big fuss and go down in flames politically or otherwise. I mean, there are certain people I'm glad who never got near the nuclear button, Pat Robertson being one.
Man, can you imagine Ted Cruz?
Oh, I
can't. See, he would view the nuclear football that the president travels with as his personal little hotline button to bring Jesus back.
Yes, and yes, he actually, Ted Cruz reminds me of a character in the Stephen King novel, let's see, was it not The Shining? It's not The Stand. It's the one where there's a psychic who shakes the hand of a man who he sees becoming president and implementing a nuclear war. It was one of his early books, but Ted Cruz, like some of the figures in The Stand, believes
the dead zone.
The dead zone, yes. Ted Cruz seems to believe in absolutes. He seems to leave no room for compromise of the thought. There are others who...
Well, what do you want? What do you want from a guy whose father, and see, here's some more of that co-option of culture, what do you want from a guy whose father has anointed his son to be king of America?
Yes, and I am sorry. This shows arrogance, and I would like to say there are certain things I'm grateful for in history because some people learned humility. John F. Kennedy, who had known suffering, defeat, and loss, probably understood that in 1962 you had to allow Khrushchev to save face. He also had the wisdom and will to say, you know, bombing Cuba would be a bad thing. And now that we know there were 20,000 Russian technicians and other officials in Cuba, I am grateful that JFK beat out Nixon. Otherwise, we might not be having this conversation right now.
No, this planet might be a cinder.
Right, or at the very least, we will have the 1960s would have been far more tragic than they were. So I think we have to realize our own strength and our own unity. And this is why we need to keep the conversation going here. We have to keep the conversation going with our neighbors. We must find what wisdom we can in our own traditions and cultures and work to bring them to the fore to solve common problems. The problems of the inner city, the problems of the suburbs, the problems of the Rust Belt, Appalachia, the South and the West should all be our common concerns. One of the few things that the conservatives have done, which I think we need to desperately learn from in addition to messaging, is the creation of a single movement. We need a progressive movement. We need to stop saying I'm an environment, I'm an LGBT activist, I'm a religious freedom activist. We should have those causes, and they do a lot of good, particularly Mikey Weinstein's Military Religious Freedom Foundation comes to mind, which ironically protects more Christians from the fundamentalists than any other single category of client. But if we have the ability to unite on common principle and common respect, what can stand against us?
Right. You're absolutely right. But then again, you know, it gets back to that, and I'm not trying to be just a negative guy, but the challenge is always in getting people to cooperate and work together. And especially on our side. By God, the right wing can line up and form up and they can march and they can do it, and with no deviation from message discipline whatsoever. Our side, though, you know, I've said before, people say that organizing liberals and progressives is like herding cats, and I say bullshit, because you can open a can of little Friskies and get a lot of cats to come in the same direction. It's butterfly wrangling over here.
Yeah.
With a net the size of a tea strainer.
Right. We have to start convincing each other that we have the same interests at heart, because our interests are not, as we narrowly define them, environmental, development, LGBT rights, religion, what have you. It is fundamental survival, fundamental dignity and decency. These should be the three things that we see as we assure for each other. Because let us remember the words of Benjamin Franklin, who I would love if we could bring back him, Madison, and Jefferson, if only for a few weeks, just to observe things and shake things up. Remember, Franklin at Independence Hall said, "Surely we must hang together, or we shall all hang separately."
Amen to that. Hey, Will, it's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
A pleasure. And remember, Bob is still in need of donations because, unlike some people, he does not have Mitt Romney getting his back.
No Starship money here.
No, nothing from Planet cobalt or.
And you know, the payments due on the Learjet. I've got to get the spinning rims polished.
Yeah.
You know, Agnes's masseur is giving us a dirty look. The price of caviar has gone through the freaking roof.
And sadly, the Jewish World conspiracy hasn't gotten my check to me in quite a while.
Oh, I know. You know, I think George Soros has lost my address or something. It's terrible.
I'll talk to you.
Maybe the learned elders of Zion lost your address too.
Yeah, yes, they probably gave me confused with a cattle rancher in Nevada. probably not. He's so many kinds of crazy out there that you almost expect Rod Serling to step out in front of that place.
Oh, no kidding. Let me tell you about the Negroes. God almighty.
Will, you know, Bob.
Well, have a good evening, Will.
Have a good evening.
Bye now. Oh, I love my conversations with Will. He puts so much thought into what he brings to the table. He's right. We are $25 away from getting all the way out of the hole that we had jumped into last night and tonight. $25 to go, and how wonderful it would be to just wrap up that way and just have the plain old $150 to deal with tomorrow evening. Thanks, everybody. This is one of those days that has flown by, and I'll tell you on the way out the door here that the 26th of June is never an easy day. This was the day, 43 years ago, that I picked up the phone, because I loved answering the phone when I was a kid. I picked up the phone, and a voice I'd never heard on the other end of the line said, "Son, is your daddy there?" I said, "No, Dad's at work." "Is your mama?" I said, "Yes, sir." "Let me talk to your mama, son." And he identified himself as a Detective Nykirk from the Atlanta Police Department. And he was calling to inform my parents that their older son, my brother, had just had his brains splattered outside his skull in a handgun accident in a place called Sandy Springs, Georgia. That was June the 26th, 1971. And so every June 26th occasions a little bit of what if for me. And there are layers and layers of what if. That was the first time ever I saw Atlanta, Georgia. We left immediately. So when you hear me talking about firearms and the stupidity of our current gun culture, understand that it is not some aesthetic discussion for me or for countless thousands of other people all over this country. Time to get on out of here. Thanks, everybody, for keeping all of this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you very much to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.